Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our coverage of the deaths of officers Lou and Ramos and the shooting in Bed-Stuy took their lives continues now with a look at the history of assassinations, a history that Commissioner Bratton framed on Saturday at Woodhull Hospital.
Tragically, too, this is not the first time this department has seen such violence. Seven times since 1972, we have seen partners murdered together. Often in incidents such as this, mindless assassinations without warning. Our officers know this from the memorial walls on our precincts and headquarters and from the stories they hand down. Nevertheless, they do what we expect of them. They grieve, they mourn, but then they go out onto the streets of the city and work to keep it safe every day and every night.
And according to the New York Times today, 46 police officers were killed in the line of duty in the 1970s and 41 were killed in the 1980s. But before Saturday's shooting in Bed-Stuy, a police officer had not been killed, not one in New York City in the line of duty since the year 2011. Again this morning, the commissioner drew a connection to the past in a conversation with the Today Show's Matt Lauer.
Have you ever seen a time like this of tension and a divide like this in a city?
1970, when I first came into policing, my first 10 years were around this type of tension. Who would have ever thought deja vu all over again that we'd be back where we were 40-some-odd years ago?
And joining us now to talk about some of the history of police assassinations and the relationship between City Hall and the NYPD in tense times is Richard Aborn, president of the police policy think tank, the Citizens Crime Commission of New York City. Richard Aborn, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Always a pleasure to be with you.
So we just heard Commissioner Bratton in that clip describing, quote, mindless assassinations without warning. These, quote, seven times since 1972 that partners have been killed. Were you also reminded of this history of police assassinations in New York, watching the events on Saturday so horrible in Bedford-Stuyvesant?
Yeah, no, of course. You know, these were memories that we thought we had buried forever and that would never come back. And here they were roaring back into our collective consciousness with the same brutality and the same shock that occurred back in the 70s. Let us hope, and I don't believe it will happen, but let us hope we are not going down that path again. I think this incident was the actions of a deranged individual acting alone in a deeply emotional state. I don't think this is a harbinger of what's to come, but the police have got to be vigilant because we don't know, and the police will be vigilant.
Were many of those in the past more explicitly political?
They were more political, sure. They were more driven, more planned. They did not have sort of the spontaneous character that this one has, and I think that's an important distinction to remember. We're also in a period where, as you said and the commissioner quite rightly said, it is increasingly rare that we see the killing of a police officer. It's been a couple of years here, and that's been very good. And likewise, it's been increasingly rare that the police kill individuals, despite what we've seen recently. It's an absolute horror. But the trending is all correct. Unfortunately, we've had this incredible barbaric act, which has now set us back a little bit. And maybe in some ways, that's the most important lesson here. Let's not let these two brave, brave officers die in vain. We were on the verge of making some real progress in this city and police-community relations, even though it doesn't feel that way right now. We need to press on with that. That's very important work to be done. We need to understand the anger that's out there, the frustration that's out there on both sides, accept that and move forward, not move backwards, but move forward.
Listeners, anyone who remembers the 1970s and 1980s and some of the police assassinations in New York City of the past, or want to ask a question about them or say anything else about the current situation, 212-433-WNYC for Richard Aborn from the Citizens Crime Commission and a former prosecutor, 212-433-9692. Do you happen to have the stats at hand on the drop in police shootings? That may be something that gets lost in the events that that have taken place and are very real. But in terms of police shootings of suspects in New York City. How many do we have in recent years compared to decades past? Do you happen to have it?
So I apologize, Brian. I don't have them at my fingertip, but I can absolutely tell you the trend. The trend is we are way, way down, and this year will be yet another low, which is good. Just like crime this year will be at its lowest level. We've seen a very steady decline in police uses of force by the NYPD over every single year in the last probably 15 years. Unfortunately, it's a large incident like Gardner, and I totally understand why. That captures our imagination because it all seems so inexplicable. But the trend is down, and people need, I hope, will understand that. And it's down for specific reasons. The department has been very, very careful to make sure it not only investigates every single time a police officer uses their weapon, but they train frequently on when the weapon can be used. And they're, in fact, as we all know, they're in the middle of doing trainings now of the entire patrol force. So it's a department that keeps a very careful eye on these incidents, and you see the results. Again, the trend is absolutely downward, but I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers
right
at my fingertips.
And, of course, there's a chicken and egg question here, too. If changes in society have also reduced the amount of criminal activity that there is, then there's less opportunity for encounters with police officers that could result in shootings. So it's probably multifactorial. Is there less shooting by police officers because there's less crime, or is there, you know, less crime because there's less shooting?
But, well, that's a very complicated question, calling for pure speculation.
Yes.
I think the answer is we do see a direct cause and effect between changes that the NYPD implemented. Actually, it was under Deputy Commissioner Timoney going back a number of years, and the sharp decline in shootings. Certainly, you know, in the sense that violence begets violence, public safety begets public safety. So sure, there's probably a correlation between less criminal activity out there and fewer police shootings. And as you know, Brian, in the social sciences, direct cause and effect is always hard to identify. But we do see a much more vigorous response by the department now. The officers know they're under sharp scrutiny. They know if they fire that gun, they're going to have to explain why. And I think that's leading to a lot of restraint, and that's good. Coupled with the increased training, the training's getting better and better because of the technology. There are all these shoot, don't shoot scenarios, which train officers in when to use, not when to use the gun, when to fire the gun and when not to fire the gun.
Let's go back to some of the history. Commissioner Bratton highlighted the year 1972 in particular, and that was the year, for example, that officers Rocco Lori and Gregory Foster were killed in the East Village. Officer Lori's widow had asked the mayor in that instance to stay away from the funeral. The Patrolman's Benevolent Association has been delivering a letter to officers these days, as you know, so they can request, if they so choose, the mayor not attend their funerals if they're killed in the line of duty. As president of the Citizens Crime Commission, how do you understand that request, and is it rooted in history in any way?
I understand it because of the situation we find ourselves in. These police officers have been under siege now for months and months and months. They've had protesters, literally, to use the street phrase, in their face, saying horrific things for months and months and months. They've been under verbal attack for months and months and months. And all the while, they have been out delivering public safety to everybody, policing these demonstrations with enormous restraint and not responding. In some ways, this has been a remarkable display of how the First Amendment should be exercised. Lawful protests, lawful First Amendment exercises, police in a very, very light way, except for a couple of minor instances, which are absolutely awful. So they're feeling angry. They're feeling under strain. They're feeling isolated. So, of course, they're gonna burst out in some way. That's how I understand it. I think the time now is to say not why are you doing this or stop doing this, but rather to figure out how to get us right back on the track towards improving relations between the police and the community. At the end of the day, the police want good relations with the community. I've worked with cops all over this country, but particularly with the NYPD. They want good relations. We have to lead towards that. Commissioner Bratton is incredibly dedicated to achieving that. And while I think there's a lot of anger out there right now, I think it will begin to calm down over this week. And I think we will get back to the dialogue that we very desperately need to get back to, which is improving the quality of life in the city.
And the Times also wrote about another death in 1972 of Philip Cardillo. The officer was shot inside a mosque after being lured there by a 911 call. Mayor Lindsay at the time went on vacation instead of attending the funeral, I guess the story goes, and a source told the Times that this is de Blasio's Cardillo moment. He's obviously not going to go on vacation before the funerals of officers Ramos and Liu. So what do you think a statement like that might mean? Do you see any parallel challenge, at least, for the mayor?
I think the mayor is in a very tough position. I do think he's been handling this well. I think there's some space to go here. I think he's got to encourage dialogue between the various sides involved with this, and I think he needs to respect the wishes of the families. One family has already said that he is welcome at the funeral. Clearly, if an officer had signed the petition saying, please don't attend, I assume that the mayor would not attend. But I think he needs to rise above, and I think he is, this fiery rhetoric that's out there, understand where it's coming from, understand the deep anger, and go to those funerals and be the leader that he's very much capable of being and is being throughout these days. Again, this is, to use a sometimes trite phrase, this is a time of healing. This should not be a time of divisiveness. We've got to come together around these things.
And I wonder if the shootings of officers Ramos and Liu present new opportunities or new obstacles for solving police-community relations. You know, Errol Lewis, the anchor on New York One, wrote a column for CNN this weekend in which he said, quote, the madman's actions could not have happened at a worse time for a city already embroiled in a bitter public battle over police-community relations. It's very possible that an important debate about race, policing, and the proper use of force will be buried along with the martyred officers. And I wonder if you think that's likely, or if perhaps, since everybody's in grief over this shooting, I think on all political sides, there becomes a kind of hush over the city and over the whole dynamic, and perhaps a greater opportunity to get a handle on the policy differences.
I have great respect for Earl. He is a fantastically bright man, a fantastic reporter and interviewer. But on this one, I have to disagree. I think it's the opposite. I don't think it's a crisis. I do think this is an opportunity. I think this has really shocked people in a way that almost nothing else could shock. And no death should ever be in vain, and particularly a barbarous death like this. It's just so savage. We have trouble comprehending it. We cannot let these officers' lives be wasted. So we have to use this opportunity to come back together. And I do think that's what's going to happen. Because again, before this happened, we were beginning to make progress. I'm part of this dialogue. We were beginning to make progress. The mayor was sitting with the protesters. He was beginning to understand what they were looking for. The police commissioner has been out there talking about improved relations. He's been tasking the command staff, the NYPD, to figure out ways to improve community relationships. The department's become about building trust with communities. The dialogue was happening, and there is no reason why that dialogue should not continue. And in fact, I think now it's more compelling than ever that we accelerate that dialogue. And I know New Yorkers, that's what they're going to do. They're going to come together around this, and we're going to figure out how to repair this divide, which we have to admit exists. We're going to have to repair this divide between the communities and the police. Ultimately, this is about equality before the law. Everybody understands that, and everybody's going to pursue that. So I disagree with him.
Let's hope you're right. Let's work to make you right. Richard Ayborn, president of the Citizens Crime Commission, thank you very much.
Anytime, Brian. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll continue in a minute.